by him, and we are sponsored him by him, not so much because what he says at the podium, but the way he lives his life. So we're going to share about those. Some of it may be funny, some of it be maybe grateful.
All right.
And Sharon?
Sharon Alcoholic. So we're 43 years. Clancy's been my sponsor for 33 of the 43 years. And we talked about this morning about the when I got divorced at 10 years, and Clancy was my sponsor, and my other sponsor had 21 days, so I had to get a new sponsor, and my husband left me for a newcomer, and I had no job and a new baby. And one Saturday night, Clancy happened to be at the meeting. He travels a lot. And I was there in my I Hate Everyone outfit, which was I was going to a punk rock concert called The Cramps, and with sober people. And so I was wearing my Midol shirt I had made. I had my hair all Madonna white and spiked up, and so I could poke you to get away from me because I was mad at everybody because nobody, you know, didn't tell me he was having an affair. And they were in the back of the room, and they looked happy, and they were going to be pregnant and married in that order, and I was really upset. And I heard somewhere that you can't be spiritual with hot coffee all down the front of you. So I found myself with two big cups of hot black coffee, and I had them in my sights in the corner of the room. And Clancy happened to be there that night, and he happened to see the look I had and the bead I had on them in the corner. So he stopped me halfway, and I didn't even know he was there, and he stopped me, and he took one hand and put it on my shoulders and made me look at him, and he says, "Sharon, you'll walk through this with dignity and grace so you can be an example to others." Oh, I heard him. So I gave up the spare keys to the car of my soon-to-be ex-husband. I had his spare keys because I was going to drive his car to low tide on Venice Beach. I had a lot of plans. So I gave up the keys that night, worked on my inventory. And the funny thing is about that story is after they had a baby who was a year and a half old, he left her for number three. So she told me that she had, because the man made me walk through with dignity and grace to be an example to others, I didn't get to judge who got my example. Jill, the soon-to-be second ex-wife, said that she knew that she could do it because she had watched me walk through it. And this summer, when my son got married in France, Jill and I went, and we traveled afterwards and had a blast. And one more story, which I love. My father was killed in 1999, and it was Clancy was my sponsor. He was in Africa or somewhere before cell phones. We couldn't reach him, and I was shocked, and my family was shocked, I couldn't, you know, reach my sponsor. And so I went home to my family, and AA was already in my mother's kitchen. Thank you. But there we were at the, my father was going to have a wake at the big church, and he was a very big businessman in the town, and everyone loved him. And he was a good man. And so we're at the church, and it's pouring rain, and all day long I knew I couldn't talk. Now, I had written my father the notes and paid him back the money and for 5 years, and then he said, "Sharon, I want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes." So I got to write my father one more note and put my chip in the coffin with him. We were good. But that night, I was going to play him an accordion number. My dad was Czech and played the button accordion. So that afternoon, I thought, I can't talk. I have to play him a number. I have to play a song for my father at his wake at this church. And I worked on it all day long. I played the accordion, but the piano accordion. This was buttons, 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 buttons. And I had no idea how to do this Czechoslovakian heliganka, beautiful accordion. So I sat in the closet with a girl I sponsor for about 2 hours and worked on Amazing Grace. And after about 2 hours, I said, "Kathy, how's it sound?" She goes, "Oh, it's better." So I was a little nervous about doing this, but I went to the wake, and everybody thinks I'm not, nobody knows who I am in this town I grew up in. They, "Oh, you're your sister, oh, you're Nancy or Sally," and I was like really starting to get irritated and nervous and upset, and I said, Clancy's got to be back. So I went to the rectory, and I called the mission, and he didn't pick up. So I hung up. I called back. I said, "Tell Clancy he's got 45 seconds to get on the phone. I'm just about ready to bust," right? He gets on the phone. He says, "Sharon, I'm so sorry. I heard about your dad." And I'm going, you know, sponsors have to decipher what's going on when the baby's like sobbing on the phone. And so he got on me, accordion, number, I can't, I don't know. And so he says, Sharon, he's so good at deciphering. He says, Sharon, you're going to do a beautiful job for your father. You're going to play Amazing Grace beautifully for your father. Look around that church when you're done. There won't be a dry eye. But do me one big favor. There will be about two or three people in that church sobbing. Those are the musicians. He brought me right out of that. And the last thing I want to say is one of my favorite pictures. I put it on my altar at my retreat where I have my favorite photos. It was 5 years ago right here. Sandy Beach here. Me here, and Clancy photobombing. It's the best picture of my life. I love you, Clancy. Happy birthday.
Hi, Mary Alcoholic. In 1990, my sponsor, Rini, that Mildred knows, had told me my sons had been put out of the father's house in Jamaica. I had lost custody of my kids, but they didn't get on with the stepmother, and they were living with their old grandmother in Jamaica, and my sponsor, Rini, told me I should go back to Jamaica and get my kids fixed out. And I got very afraid. I was 8 years sober. And I was afraid I was going to drink again. I was afraid I was going to end up on the street again. I was afraid I was going to end up in a mental institution. I was filled with fear. And Rini said to me, look, honey, I've never been in a mental institution. I've never lived on the street, but I know somebody who has. And she gave me Clancy's number. And when I went down to Jamaica, I called Clancy. And he said to me, I'd be glad to help you. I said, well, I've got a job in Jamaica. I'm flying up and down to the States, and maybe I'd get to see you. He said, yeah. He said, to tell you what, darling, write a little bit about your life and fax it to me. This was when I was faxed. Do you know what a fax is? Well, anyway. So I wrote out, you know, my life story, more or less, and I faxed it to Clancy. And the next day, the phone rang, and it was Clancy. I was in Montego Bay living, and he said, Mary, this is Clancy. I just read your fax, and I thought I should call you immediately upon reading. And I thought, oh, God, he's going to say I'm too crazy even for him. And he said, I've got something that I need to tell you after I've read this. I said, what is it, Clancy? He said, you really shouldn't drink. But the wonderful thing that he saved my life, because I was so filled with fear that I was actually shaken sometimes. And I would call him, and he'd be there for me. And I was talking about it with him today. I was flying up to the States I was working for a Jamaican export company, and I flew up to the States, and Clancy was in Daytona Beach at the time. And he said, come to the conference, and, you know, we'll do a mini fifth step. And he had rented a car, and he drove me all around Mount Canaveral, and I read out my fifth step. And then he said, let's stop here. I want to see if they can syringe my ear. And I thought, was it that bad? You know, was it? But actually, he'd been having trouble with his ears, so it wasn't my fault. I will say to you that he saved my life over that period. He would send me tapes at the time of the Pacific Group, and he was always there for me. And the other massive thing he helped me with was that eventually when my sons did come back to live with me, I was flying out to Vancouver Island where my eldest son was getting married. And my son wanted me to come out, and his father was coming from Jamaica. And my son wanted his father and I to walk him down the aisle. And I had made amends to my ex-husband, but I didn't like him that much. And I was talking to Clancy about it, and Clancy said to me, you know, just go there and make sure that you behave well and carry yourself well. And he said, I'll have people there watching you. And I did go out, and I walked my son down the aisle with his father, and his father was saying to me, my God, you look good. I thought a leper could never change its spots. Alcoholics Anonymous has worked wonders for you. And I didn't say anything. I just was looking at him and saying, so nice to be with you. Your children look lovely and your wife is lovely. And inside I'm thinking, I wish Clancy could see how well I'm handling this. And at the same time I was thinking to myself, when I was, you know, blessing him and his wife and your kids, and 20 years ago I hired 2 gunmen to shoot you. Anyway, Clancy, I want to thank you for everything you've done for me, for always being there for me, and I love you very much. Thank you so much.
My name is Mildred, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I hail from Toronto. And Clancy, you have quite a voice in Toronto. There are people who are afraid of you. I'm not one of them, I'm happy to say. The first time that I had heard of Clancy, and I think I was sober about a year and a half, and I was a mess. And my sponsor took me to the ORC, and Clancy was the Friday night speaker. Clancy, I don't ever remember having laughed the way I laughed that night. And, you know, you've come many times, and you have brought that good spirit. A couple of years later, I had started to speak at conferences, been invited, and 1 year we were going to Brandon, and Clancy was going to be on the program, and I was deeply honored. Imagine me on the same program with Clancy. And so Clancy was the banquet speaker, and he gave just one terrific talk. And I just remember we laughed the whole time. It was so fantastic. And I'm sitting there thinking, now I have to find something profound to say, and I could to say thank you. And I couldn't get it together, so I thought, well, I'll do it tomorrow morning. And so I thought, I'll go to my room and I'll think up something wonderful and I'll tell him the next morning. So the next morning, I meet him in the hall. And I say to him, good morning, Clancy. I wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed, and I'm trying to get out my words of profoundness. And I say, you know, you gave such a fabulous talk. And he looked at me and he said, sure didn't look like it last night. Do you remember that, Clancy? I'm sure you don't. And then I can imagine the face. And then proceeded to tell me how I ought to behave if I was going to speak at conferences. And I have to tell you this, Clancy. I've said this to you privately, and I'll say it publicly tonight because I think it. I really believe you are the guardian of the integrity of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that in those places where we really uphold what Alcoholics Anonymous is about, and where we live by the principles of the steps and the program and everything that we have, part of it is because of the message that you have carried across the world and the faithfulness you have been to that integrity. You've been in Toronto and you've spoken of singleness of purpose, and you have spoken of particularly the other thing, anonymity. I still hear that being quoted in Toronto. And I want you to know that I personally feel that I'm a better person because I know you and I've had the privilege of hearing you. God bless you for everything that you have done to keep this program in the healthy position that it is.
You know the program works when the Lutheran kisses an ex-nun.
Yeah, I just don't get in the habit. That's his joke, not mine. He used to describe himself as the illegitimate son of Dr. Bob and Sister Ignatia. So if you want to know what level irreverence gets to, you... And Bob, I'm an alcoholic. Clancy and I have always had kind of a complex relationship. I think throughout much of our relationship, he's used me as kind of a pain in the ass. But there's been, a mutual respect and love in our relationship over a period of time. I was thinking back to the first time that I kind of was looking at Clancy. I started a roundup with a buddy of mine in Minnesota, and we get 8,000 people every year. And I wanted to get, about our fifth year, I wanted to get Clancy. And some of the old-timers didn't want him. He had a, you know, they were talking about he was kind of an unruly character. There was a list of about six or seven ways that he was unruly. And finally, I said, screw it. And I asked him, and he came and obviously did a great job. Clancy has... So first of all, we're talking about a man who is at the end of the first generation of the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, or the very beginning of the second. But if you count 25 years, 1960 would have been 25 years, and Clancy came in 58, I'm sorry. He has been, after Chuck, he kind of took the mantle of the largest communicator we've had in Alcoholics Anonymous. He is an unruly son of a bitch. He is, you could, if you wanted to be a critic of Clancy, there's a lot of different things you could go select. And there would be some of the old timers that wouldn't, but if you were to gather the other big guys and big gals in the program, they all left him alone. Why? He had the magic. They looked at what he was doing, and they said, people are getting well in his group that would die in mine. I can remember, we're on that cruise that Keith put together, Bob White and Chuck and everybody on the deal. Linda and I are walking up the stairs, and he is screaming at this woman. Not nicely, and the language was kind of rough. And, you know, we were kind of surprised and irritated by it. We asked someone about it, and the woman was dying of anorexia, and he was the only person she would eat for. And so daily, so the hundreds of different ways that Clancy has touched people's lives. He's like a savant. I mean, he is as eccentric a man as you will find. I think it's interesting. I think he's as private a man as you will find, who has lived his life in a very public way in Alcoholics Anonymous. It is astounding. We have been the benefactors of that. There are a dozen different things that are sayings that are attributed to Clancy. You couldn't pick a dozen things. I mean, there's probably more than a dozen, but the idea of a disease of perception, the idea that you throw the towel in and then grab it back, and pick up a piece at a time and resurrender, you know. There are just, you know, that it's a program. You can't, you know, think your way into good acting. You have to act your way into good thinking. He's a behaviorist. I mean, his group, the largest AA group in the world. I mean, there are just, if you were measuring the influence that this man has had, there is no other person alive and active in Alcoholics Anonymous today that could come close to this man. As Howard talks about it, he's a tall pole in the tent. And I'll tell you, there aren't almost any other tall poles left in the tent. The tent of the first generation, or the very early part of the second generation, they're gone. And we've had him a long time. And he's been fully active all during that time. I admire you, and I'm grateful for your long and wonderful contribution. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Barbara. I'm a grateful Al-Anon. The first time I met Clancy, I was a young bride, and there were two of them. There was him, and there was an ice sculpture of his head that was on the other side of the ballroom. And as many Al-Anons may, you know, a number of us a number of people have told me over the years they're a little scared of him. But I'm not, and I love Clancy, and I love what he's done for my husband, and I love what he's done for me. I know when Dick had cancer surgery, Clancy called me every day. And the first call, I went, oh, my God, Clancy left me a message. I mean, I was just shocked, but he cared, he loved us, and he wanted to know how things were going. Dick, in those first months after his recovery, he was losing a lot of weight, and he thought he looked great, and I thought he looked like an Auschwitz survivor, and I just wasn't sure how much longer he was going to be around. And he was coming up on his 30th anniversary, and I knew that sometime for people's 40th anniversary, Clancy would get them an honorary Oscar. And I called him one day, and I asked him if there was any possibility he could help me get it. And he said, sure. And I said, now, I'm not asking you to pay for this. He said, well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to get the money, and I want you to put it in an envelope. And I want you to take the envelope and go stick it in a tree. And whoever gets the money was the one that was supposed to have it, not me. And that's just some of my memories of Clancy. But I love him very much, and I am very glad that he's been in my life. Thank you.
I'm still Vic. Yes, sir.
This is very similar to sitting through your own funeral.
I'm still Dick Anderson, still alcoholic. And Clancy's been my sponsor, I think, 7 years, whenever Bill Roop died, if anybody can remember when Bill died. Bill was the voice here for a while. And Bill was a great man. And Bill, when I knew he knew he was going, and I asked him who he would recommend for me to ask, and he said, Clancy. Clancy knows you well. And I first met Clancy when I was about a year and a half sober. The first speaker I ever heard was played on a tape. It was Sandy Beach. A week later, they took me to a meeting. This was 41 and a half years ago. And the first live speaker I heard was Chuck Chamberlain. And I heard him 5 times before I ever heard Clancy. And they were talking about humility. I didn't talk much during the first couple of years. I was trying to listen, confused. And Chuck would get up there, and he was very peaceful, and he talked about God, and I thought, that's what it's like. It's like Gary Cooper in Sergeant York, where he's just kind of quiet, and he's up there. So humility was somebody who was meek, and I had no idea what humility was. But Clancy came and spoke at the Quarterly in Louisville in 1978. That's the first time I heard him. And I thought, that's not humility. He was, you know, I thought he was abrasive. He was, you know, he was crazy and all this. And I thought, well, I don't understand that. So here's what happened. What changes my perception is what I watch people do, not what they say. over a period of time, I don't know anybody else who has given more to people in every aspect of his life. I once asked him how he managed all his time because he sponsors so many people and he does so many things. And he told me truthfully how he handled some things. I don't know anybody who has been able to use his time better, use his resources better. He lives in a modest house, and even that modest house he makes the boast of. There's a little outhouse behind it, a garage. And all the pigeons go over there to play volleyball every Saturday. Everything he's got becomes something that is useful to people in Alcoholics Anonymous. All of it's fun. I mean, you know, it's all fun. It's part of it. But in my life, there are many areas that I like to keep private. I don't want somebody part of. There is no part of his life that does not touch us that he doesn't use for somebody. And this is a man who could have, because of the career he had, he could have been very wealthy and just been a member. He could have kind of sat a big house with lots of money. Instead, he took every bit of that talent and used it for us in Alcoholics Anonymous for years and years and years. I wasn't sure about service the first time Bill Roop sent me out to his group in the Pacific group. Somebody met me in the parking lot, and this was probably 35 years ago. Somebody met me in the parking lot. They took me in. Nobody sat down until everybody was seated. Everybody got a cup of coffee. Everybody had a service position. You could not go to that meeting without feeling like you were engaged and you were part of. That didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of Clancy. Clancy led that. I don't know anybody else that has done more for Alcoholics Anonymous and in my life taught me more about humility just by the way he lives, not by what he says. But the attraction of what he says is phenomenal. In San Antonio, I chaired the meeting with he and Peg Martin, and I can't remember who the third person was speaking. We set up for 5,000, and, you know, we said, well, maybe we're going to have a few more chairs. There were 12,000 people in a breakout meeting that came there because Clancy was there. He's a treasure, and so the rest of the meeting is yours, Clancy, for whatever you want to say, and if we can indulge upon you, maybe we'll sing some songs if you want to play the piano. Welcome, Clancy.
Now, speaking for the defense, we've heard a lot about tonight, about Chuck Chamberlain. Let me tell you about Chuck Chamberlain, a great spiritual leader. My first sponsor was a mean, tough guy, and he made me do things, and he saved my life. But then he died. I thought, who could I possibly get to be my sponsor now? I couldn't think of anybody. I thought about Chuck Chamberlain, but he was so spiritual. I know he'd make me go to church every night or something. So I called him one day, and I said, I'd like to come down and speak to you. And he said, okay. And so I went down and talked to him. I said, I'd changed my mind by that time. I said, well, I originally came down to ask you to be my sponsor, Chuck. He said, oh, really? What a surprise. I thought you came down to offer to be mine. But I, and Sandy Beach, you mentioned Sandy Beach, he's such a noble man, and he was a noble man. But I was in Tampa, this is a story about AA now, not about me. I was in Tampa speaking, and I knew that Sandy Beach was dying on the other side of town. So I called him up, and we went over and spent the afternoon cursing mutual friends. Just before I left, he said, oh, Clancy, before you go, I want to tell you something. I had the damnedest dream last night. I dreamt I had died, and St. Peter would not let me through the pearly gates. I said, why not, St. Peter? He said, nothing personal, young man. He says, you're not on the list. He said, but I'm a friend of Bill Wilson. He's not on the list either. But I'm very pleased to have a number of good friends here and people that I know well. And I've been very active in AA, not because I'm a good man, but because that's required for people like me to stay active, because I'm just a goer, and I got to go one direction or another. And if any of you have heard stories about me, let me just say one thing. The girl swore she was 14. When I was a young man, I played in a lot of bars and a lot of saloons, and in my drinking days, I'd find myself in a strange town. I could find a piano and play for a while. And everybody was singing so well, it was like the Norwegian Lutheran Church here for a while. So I'm going to play some songs maybe you want to sing. As far as I'm concerned, the only music that you should ever play is an A thing. I'm going to play now, and that's the end of it. In the days of wine and roses. To buy a drink.
If you will, all the speakers that are here this weekend, come up and we can get Clancy to come back to the piano. We're going to take a picture of all of us around him at the piano.
You want to end with the Lord's Prayer?